Our theme tonight, as y'all know, is anticipation, something a little bit about Advent, being as Christmas is just around the corner. So before we bring up our MC for the evening, Jim MP, we thought we'd just start with a little meditation on Advent. Dear God, I have never given much thought to Advent before, never entered into the waiting. So easily robbed of its meaning by a society bent on destruction, Advent, or rather December, always seemed more like a month to slog through rather than an experience to be lived. But this year, in this place enveloped with thick fallen snow and shrouded in wintertime darkness, I am waiting. This past fall, you whispered into my inclined ear and I heard my name called. For weeks, I heard your footsteps in my heart. For weeks I felt your presence like a summertime breeze blow softly through the open door of my life, gently lifting the curtains, airing out the musty places, and freshening my soul. But as far as I can tell, you never finished the sentence. I heard, Margot, comma, dot, dot, dot. And it is in those dots, those not yet periods which imply a continuing story, it is in those dots I live and wait. I wait for the sentence to be finished, the thought to be completed. I attempt to finish the sentence myself, trying on possibilities like so many sweaters at the thrift store. But each possibility, each ending of the sentence winds up in a pile on the floor. I can't make any of them fit, and I can't make those dots turn into periods. And so I wait, not without impatience. I think, what can I do to hurry this along a little? How can I cajole God, needle her into doing things in my time, not hers? Make her tell me now what she has planned for me. What am I waiting for? And then the powerful, surprising mystery of Christmas hits home like a well-driven nail right into my heart. The waited for, longed for, hoped for Christ child did arrive. The word was made flesh. The prophecy did come to pass. And God does provide for those who wait. And so in this snowy, winter dark place, I wait, trusting the ambiguity, living with the uncertainty, and knowing deep in my bones the light will come and bring with it clarifying peace. So welcome to the coffee house, and here's Jim, our MC for the evening.
Thank you very much. We have a bevy of talent in this room, and we coerced a few of them to come forth tonight. And I also was able to get some brief biographical information from each of our performers this evening that was supplied by themselves. So it will give you a little bit more of an insight into who they are. And I will be introducing each performer as the evening goes on. So our next performer is direct from Motown. Before coming to Holden, he was an oil rig operator off the coast of Greenland. He left the business because of a deep love he felt for a native Greenlander. However, this love is a tragic ending because she was in turn killed by an oil spill. And so he has sworn off the oil business and is in recovery here at Holden. Would you welcome Jordan Horner? Thank you.
Okay, our next performer, I use that word carefully, is originally from Paris, where she worked as a stripper. She went by the pseudonym The Naughty Nurse, and she came to Holden because the people in France did not wash their hands enough. Would you welcome Gail Rossi?
Bonsoir, mes amis. Come on, ça va? Come on, ça va? Oui? That's my French. I would like to read a few stories tonight to all of us who live here in the snow. I've been thinking a lot about when I was a young child growing up in Minneapolis and all the fun I had in the snow, and how sometimes it's hard for me to be able to get out and do some of those things that I used to do as a kid. So, here we go. The first book that I'm going to read is called Katie and the Big Snow. Have any of you children heard that story before? Okay. Katie was a beautiful red crawler tractor. She was very big and very strong, and she could do a lot of things. Katie had a bulldozer to push dirt around with. Katie also had a snowplow to plow snow with. Katie belonged to the highway department of the city of Joopolis. The highway department repaired the roads in the summer and kept them clear of snow in the winter so traffic could run in and out and around the city. All summer, Katie worked on the roads with her bulldozer. Katie liked to work. The harder and tougher the job, the better she liked it. Once when the steamroller fell in the pond, Katie pulled it out. The highway department was very proud of her. They used to say, "Nothing can stop her." When winter came, they put snowplows on the big trucks and changed Katie's bulldozer for her snowplow. But Katie was so big and strong, she had to stay at home because there was not enough snow for her to plow. Then early one morning, it started to drizzle. The drizzle turned into rain. The rain turned into snow. By noon, it was 4 inches deep. The highway department sent out the truck plows. By afternoon, the snow was 10 inches deep and still coming down. "Looks like a big snow," they said at the highway department, and sent Katie out. A strong wind came up and drifts began to form. 1 foot, 2 feet, 3 feet, 5 feet. The snow reached the first story windows, the second story windows, and then it stopped. One by one, the truck snowplows broke down. The roads were blocked. No traffic could move. The schools, the stores, the factories were closed. The railroad station and airport were snowed in. The mail couldn't go through. The police couldn't protect the city. The telephone and power lines were down. There was a break in the water main. The doctor couldn't, or the nurse, get his patient to the hospital. The fire department was helpless. Everyone and everything was stopped. But Katie. The city of Joopolis was covered with a thick blanket of snow. Slowly and steadily, Katie started to plow out the city. Help! Cried the chief of police. Help us get out to protect the city. Sure, said Katie. Follow me. So Katie plowed out the center of the city. Help! Cried out the postmistress. Help! Help! Cried out. Help get the mail through. Sure, said Katie. Follow me. So Katie plowed down to the railroad station. Help! Help! Called out the telephone company and the electric company. The poles are down somewhere in East Joopolis. Follow me, said Katie. So Katie plowed out the roads to East Joopolis. Help! Called out the superintendent of the water department. There's a break in the water main somewhere in North Joopolis. Follow me, said Katie. And she plowed out the roads to North Joopolis. Help! Emergency! Called out the doctor. Help me get this patient to the hospital way out in West Joopolis. Sure, said Katie. Follow me. So Katie plowed out the roads to the hospital. Help! 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 Called out the fire chief. Tony, are you here? There is a three-alarm fire way out in South Joopolis. Follow me, said Katie. So Katie plowed out the roads to the fire in South Joopolis. On the way back, a plane signaled for help. The helicopter, that is. That was my put-in. The airport was snowed in. Katie was beginning to get a little tired, but she wouldn't stop. Not Katie. She hurried over to the airport and plowed out the runways so the airplane could land safely. Then, after she had found the broken-down truck plow, she started home. The fire department had put out the fire. The doctor had saved his patient. The water department had repaired the main. The telephone and electricity were on. The mail could go through. And the police could protect the city, thanks to what Katie did. The Katie finished up the side street so traffic could move in and out and around the city. Then she went home to rest. Then, and only then, did Katie stop. Some of you children seen this story? It's been around for a long, long time. Is it yours? The snowy day. Thought that was appropriate. One winter morning, Peter woke up and looked out the window. Snow had fallen during the night. It covered everything as far as he could see. After breakfast, he put on his snowsuit and ran outside. The snow was piled up very high along the street to make a path for walking. Crunch, crunch, crunch. His feet sank into the snow. He walked with his toes pointing out like this. He walked with his toes pointing in like that. Then he dragged his feet slowly to make tracks. And he found something sticking out of the snow that made a new track. It was a stick. A stick that was just right for smacking a snow-covered tree. Down fell the snow, plop, on top of Peter's head. He thought it would be fun to join the big boys in their snowball fight, but he knew he wasn't old enough, not yet. So he made a smiling snow person, and he made angels. Do you like to make angels? He pretended he was a mountain climber. He climbed up a great big tall heaping mountain of snow, and he slid all the way down. Woo! He picked up a handful of snow and another and still another. He packed it round and firm and put the snowball in his pocket for tomorrow. Then he went into his warm house. He told his mother all about his adventures while she took off his wet socks. And he thought about them. Before he got into bed, he looked into his pocket. His pocket was empty. The snowball wasn't there. He felt very sad. While he slept, he dreamed that the sun had melted all the snow away. But when he woke up, his dream was gone. The snow was still everywhere. New snow was falling. After breakfast, he called to his friend from across the hall, and they went out together into the deep, deep snow.
Another chapter in Gail Rossi, RN. Truth or fiction? Okay, our next act this evening hails from Cleveland, Ohio. He was the former head of the CIA. He had a change of heart, however, when the CIA began unethical experimentation on vegetarians. Would you welcome Stephen Lawrence?
I just got this idea. I signed up to do this, and I just got this idea tonight when we were doing the Posadas thing, and I got it down and wrote it. It's just a poem that I specialized for pretty much tonight. All right. I wrote it down in my sketch diary. Only paper I could find. It's called Coffee House. Oh, how original. Coffee House, oh Coffee House. I come here a lot. And nearly every time I come, I count on meeting Scott. And the food is quite delicious, unless I have to clean the dishes. I do not drink coffee myself. That's what adults are for. The reason I come is not to see an old chum, but the warm feeling that sits in the air by me.
I won't. All right, I'm still not sure what that one's about. Okay. Our next performer hails from St. Paul, Minnesota. She turned her back on a career as a rock star to become a costume designer and shoemaker for the band Kiss. And I'm happy to announce that she and Gene Simmons will be wed at Holden on New Year's Eve. Please welcome Laura Duke.
I was intended to do a reading about anticipation, since that's a theme, and I couldn't find exactly what I was looking for. So I changed the theme, and my idea grew into from a solo act to a group act that has nothing to do with anticipation.
Did you tell you what we're going to sing? Well, we're going to sing a song called The Garden Song. And I don't know if any of you know this, but it's been a song that's been around a long time, but Arlo Guthrie has made it famous. And we're going to try to get a lot of generations involved here, including all of you. And we have the words here. Actually, could I have a volunteer to hold these? And Eric, why don't you shine the light on it? Can you see it? Well, why don't I go through the words since we're kind of trying to get the music going anyway. It goes, the chorus goes, inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down. And what we'll do is we're gonna sing the chorus together the first time, but then join with us in singing it in all the other times.
I gotta share with you.
Pardon me?
I gotta share
my
okay. Words with you.
Oh, yeah.
You ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay.
Wait.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make the garden grow. Gonna mulch it and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down. Stones. We are made of dreams and bones. Need a place to call my own. As the time goes at hand. Grain for grain, sun and rain. Find my way in nature's chain. Tune my body and my brain to the music of the land. Inch by inch, row by row. Gonna make this garden grow. Gonna make it deep and low. Gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row. Please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down. Plant your rows straight and long. Season with a prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her loving care. Oh, go watching from a tree. Me. In a garden, I'm as free as the gathered feet up there.
Here we go.
Inch
by inch, row by row. Gonna make this garden grow. Gonna make it deep and low. Gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row. Please place these seeds I sow. Please place them deep below. The rain comes tumbling down. Inch by inch, row by row. Please make this garden grow. Gonna make it deep and low. Gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row. Please bless these seeds I sow. Please leave them safe below. The rain comes tumbling down.
Good job!
Thank you.
That was Brent on verse 2.
Oh. Okay, and they said folk music was dead, huh? Not here. Okay. Next up is a man, when I asked where he's from, he said, around. When I said, what have you done before you came to Holden, he said, he'd rather not say. All I know is that he is a prestidigitator. Would you welcome Bill Lawrence?
When you make your living with sleight of hand, most of the towns you came from don't want to let you know where they came from. I forgot to bring my card tricks because my cards were confiscated in the last town. So I'm going to do a few tricks with some help from the kids. I think they needed some participation. And my kids promised not to tell how I did this. Don't know I got a hole in my arm.
Yep.
Coins disappear in there. See? You gotta take a coin like that, and then you gotta rub it, and it's cool. You just rub it real hard, and then finally it just disappears. It's not up there either.
I still don't know
how
he does that.
There it is, it's in your ear. There you go. You can keep the nickel. When my kids are in the basement, I call it the wine cellar. In case you haven't noticed, there are a few microbreweries around going in the village and have been for years. But did you know that there's a Holden wine? Why can't we have more meat? Now I know there are a few pastors' children in the congregation, so you'd appreciate this last joke. There were three kids. The first kid said that my father has a candy store. I can get all the candy I want for nothing. Second kid says, "Oh yeah, that's nothing. My dad owns a toy store. I can have all the toys I want for nothing." Third kid says, "I got you all beat. My father's a pastor. I can be good for nothing."
Wow. All right. Had the magic tricks and comedy thrown in as a bonus there, if you can call it a bonus. Well, we have one more performer before intermission. A man who needs no introduction because it's me. I actually am sort of on the theme of anticipation. As most of you know, I come from the Catholic tradition, and as of yet, we still don't have any married priests or women priests or things like that. So I am anticipating a day when that will come. We were at a conference recently where the thing that's said in the Catholic Church a lot, particularly out of Rome and other circles, is that there is a shortage of vocations. And one of the speakers said, there's not a shortage of vocations, there's a shortage of celibate men. So I thought, well, that's kind of true. So this is an essay, story, something like that, written by Rosemary Radford Ruther, so I take no credit for it. But it's sort of from the perspective that women had always been priests and men were now clamoring to try to be accepted. A synod of bishops from the four corners of the earth and a full panoply of mother superiors recently converged on the holy city of Rome to consider the vexed question of the ordination of men. The Holy See had received many tearful appeals from the cruder sex, claiming to have a call to the priesthood directly from God herself. But Her Holiness had firmly replied to these appeals that the call must have been a wrong number. Our Holy Mother in Heaven would never call to the ministry those so obviously disqualified by reason of gender. But the men had refused to take no for an answer. Throwing down their picks and shovels, they had declared that they would do no more maintenance work for the church until there was equality of rights. They sent petitions to the Holy See, filled with arguments for the ordination of men, both theological and practical. Although, of course, they could cite no example from Jesus, the incarnation of holy wisdom, because he most evidently had ordained no men to the priesthood, or woman either. It was said that confining the ordained ministry to widowed women over 65 was causing a crisis throughout the world. More and more older women felt the juices still flowing after 65 and were not willing to embrace blessed widowhood. Some preferred to run for prime minister or chairwoman of the board rather than to turn to the sacred service. Finally, Her Holiness decided to gather the holy mothers of the church together and with a number of the best qualified paritae who had spent a lifetime studying the odd characteristics of the male gender, from a safe distance, of course. They had hoped to come up with a definite answer, once and for all, to the vexed question of the ordination of men. After long and careful study, in which the Holy Mothers had enjoyed a good many laughs on the subject of men and their foibles, a final decree was drawn up defining the reasons that men could not be ordained. The decree was proclaimed by Her Holiness Urbi et Orbi, and the Holy Mothers departed for their respective seats of wisdom, feeling very pleased with themselves. The decree, ad hominem, stated to their satisfaction and, it is hoped for all time, the weighty reasons for their gut prejudices. The first part of the decree deduced a good many reasons from men's biological and psychological natures that disqualified them from the priesthood. It was said, first of all, that men were too violent and emotional to be priests. Anyone who has watched groups of men at football matches, ice hockey, soccer, or cricket games, not to mention political conventions, has seen their volatile tendencies and penchant for solving conflicts with fisticuffs. To ordain such creatures would be to risk disgraceful brawls at the altar. The male proneness to violence surely disqualifies them from representing the one who incarnates graciousness and peace. The cruder and heavier physical frame of the male clearly marks him for the physical tasks of society, digging ditches, mending roofs, and the like. The finer, more spiritual tasks of society are intended by our Mother in Heaven for those more refined spirits and bodies, women. The separation of roles is clearly evident in Scripture, where the males are said to have been created from dirt, while the women were created from human flesh. Moreover, women were created last, clearly marking them as the crown of God's creation. It was even suggested by one mother superior that Adam was a rough draft, Eve being the more refined and complete version of human nature. The mothers had a good many laughs on that one, and some decided to make it into a bumper sticker. It was also felt that men were needed for military defense. A man's place is in the army, declared one wise parita, and all the holy mothers nodded in agreement. Besides, men would look silly in red dresses and lace. The sacred garb is clearly intended for women. Profound matters of a theological nature were also discussed. One parita had prepared a long paper proving from the symbolic order that men could not be ordained. The division of humanity into male and female is a profound mystery that symbolizes the relationship of the transcendent and the immanent, the spiritual and the material. Women represented the spiritual realm, men the material. The material must be ruled by the spiritual, just as holy wisdom provides over the physical cosmos as her household. Moreover, since the church is female, those who represent the church should clearly be female as well. There should be a physical resemblance between the priest and the church as Holy Mother. Obviously, this means that all priests should be mature women. The church is also said to be the bride of Christ, and brides are female. The priest, as representative of the church in relation to Christ, represents Christ's bride. Therefore, only women can be priests. Finally, it was noted that most of the people who come to church are women. Men tend to stand outside the doors of the churches gossiping or sneaking off to sporting matches. To have a man on the altar might distract a woman from her prayers. It was hoped that, with so many clear reasons from both the natural and theological realms against the ordination of men, this would settle the matter. Male impertinence would be silenced, and they would slink back to their proper sphere. Thank you. So we'll take about 10 minutes for intermission, and please tip your servers because we don't pay them.
Music here. I'm going to sing the first one, and Theo's going to join me for the second one. Right? And then we'll see what happens. I'm going to do some Moody Blues, Cat Stevens, and Lovin' Spoonful. In white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always miss with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say. Leaping and hoping on a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hand, lose my plow, lose my land, oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. And if I ever lose my eyes, if my color all run dry, yes, if I ever lose my eyes, oh, I won't have to cry no more. Oh, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow, leaping and a-hoping on a moon shadow. Moon shadow, moon shadow. And if I ever lose my legs, I won't moan and I won't beg. Yes, if I ever lose my legs, oh, I won't. for my teeth, north and south. Oh, if I ever lose my mouth, oh, I won't have to talk no more. Oh, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. Leaping and hoping on a moon, moon shadow, moon shadow. Did it take long to find me? I asked the faithful light. Did it take long to find me? And are you gonna spend the night? Oh, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. Sleeping and hoping on a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow.
Okay, last one is an oldie but a goodie, Daydream by the Lovin' Spoonful. What a day for a daydream. What a day for a daydreaming boy. And I've lost in my daydream, dreaming about my bundle of joy. And even if time ain't really on my side, it's one of these days for taking a walk outside. I'm blowing the day to take a walk in the sun and fall on my face on somebody's new mud lawn. I've been hearing a sweet dream. I've been dreaming since I woke up today. It's starring me in my sweet dream, 'cause she's the one that makes me feel this way. And if time is passing me by a lot, I couldn't care less about the dues you say I got. Tomorrow I'll pay the dues for dropping my load, a pie in the face for being a sleepy old toad. And you can be sure that if you're feeling right, a daydream will last along into the night. Tomorrow at breakfast you may prick up your ears, or you may be daydreaming for 1,000 years. What a day for a daydream, custom made for a daydreaming boy. And I'm lost in my sweet dream, dreaming about my bundle of joy. Hard to whistle when you're shaking. Thank you.
Well, hello again. Our next storyteller comes from, originally from the Arctic Circle, actually. She studied polar bear mating rituals. She came to Holden to get away from all the snow and the cold, and also to study mating rituals. Would you welcome Chrissy Post?
Arctic, I ran across the story that was about an expedition. Well, yeah, an expedition to the North Pole. And this is read aloud time, you guys. One fine day, Pooh had stumped to the top of the forest to see if his friend Christopher Robin was interested in bears at all. And Christopher Robin was sitting outside his door putting on his big boots. As soon as he saw the big boots, Pooh knew that an adventure was going to happen, and he brushed the honey off his nose with the back of his paw and spruced himself up as well as he could so as to look ready for anything. "Good morning, Christopher Robin," he called out. "Hello, Pooh Bear. I can't get this boot on." that's bad," said Pooh. "Do you think you could very kindly lean against me? 'Cause I keep pulling so hard that I fall over backwards." Pooh sat down, dug his feet into the ground, and pushed hard against Christopher Robin's back. And Christopher Robin pushed hard against his, and pulled at his boot until he had got it on. "And that's that," said Pooh. "What do we do next?" "We are all going on an expedition," said Christopher Robin as he got up and brushed himself. "Thank you, Pooh." "Going on an expotition?" said Pooh eagerly. "I don't think I've ever been on one of those. Where are we going on this expotition?" "Expedition, silly old bear. It's got an X in it." "Oh," said Pooh, "I know." But he didn't really. "We're going to discover the North Pole." "Oh," said Pooh again. "What is the North Pole?" he asked. "It's just the thing you discover," said Christopher Robin carelessly, not being quite sure himself. "Oh, I see," said Pooh. "Are bears any good for discovering it?" "Of course they are. And Kanga and Rabbit and all of you. It's an expedition. That's what an expedition means, a long line of everybody. You'd better tell the others to get ready while I see if my gun's all right. And we must all bring provisions." "Bring what?" "Things to eat." "Oh," said Pooh happily, "I thought you said provisions. I'll go and tell them." And he stumped off. In a little while, they were all ready at the top of the forest and the expedition started. First came Christopher Robin and Rabbit, then Piglet and Pooh and Kanga with Roo in her pocket, and Owl, and then Eeyore at the end in a long line. And at the end in a long line were all of Rabbit's friends and relations. "I didn't ask them," explained Rabbit carelessly. "They just came. They always do. They can march at the end after Eeyore."
"What I say," said Eeyore, "is that it's unsettling. I didn't want to come on this expo. What Pooh said, I only came to oblige. But here I am, and if I am at the end of the expo, what we're talking about, then let me be the end. But if every time I want to sit down for a little rest, I have to brush away half a dozen of Rabbit's smaller friends and relations first, then this isn't an expo, whatever it is, at all. It's simply a confused noise. That's what I say."
"I see what Eeyore means," said Owl. "If you ask me..."
"I'm not asking anybody," said Eeyore. "I'm just telling everybody. We can look for the North Pole, or we can play Here We Go Gathering Nuts in May with the end part of the Ant's Nest. It's all the same to me."
There was a shout from the top of the line. "Come on," called Christopher Robin. "Come on," called Pooh and Piglet. "Come on," called Owl. "We're starting," said Rabbit. "I must go." And he hurried off to the front of the expedition with Christopher Robin.
"All right," said Eeyore, "we're going, only don't blame me."
Then suddenly, "Hush," said Christopher Robin, turning around to Pooh. "We're coming to a dangerous place." "Hush," said Pooh, turning around quickly to Piglet. "Hush," said Piglet to Kanga. "Hush," said Kanga to Owl, while Roo said "hush" several times, very quietly, to himself. "Hush," said Owl to Eeyore. "Hush," said Eeyore in a terrible voice to all of Rabbit's friends and relation. And "hush," they said hastily to each other all down the line, until it got to the last one of all, and the last and the smallest friend and relation was so upset to find that the whole expedition was saying "hush" to him, that he buried himself head downwards in a crack in the ground and stayed there for 2 days until the danger was over. And then he went home in a great hurry and lived quietly with his aunt ever afterwards. His name was Alexander Beetle. They had come to a stream which twisted and tumbled between high rocky banks, and Christopher Robin saw at once how dangerous it was. "It's just the place," he said, "for an ambush." "What sort of bush?" whispered Pooh to Piglet. "A gorse bush?"
"My dear Pooh," said Owl in a superior way, "don't you know what an ambush is?"
"Owl," said Piglet, looking around at him severely, "Pooh's whisper was a perfectly private whisper, and there was no need..." "An ambush," said Owl, "is a sort of surprise." "So is a gorse bush sometimes," said Pooh. "An ambush, as I was just about to explain to Pooh," said Piglet, "is a sort of surprise. If people jump out at you suddenly, then it's an ambush," said Owl. "It's an ambush, Pooh, when people jump out at you suddenly," explained Piglet. Pooh, who now knew what an ambush was, said that a gorse bush had sprung out at him suddenly one day when he fell off a tree, and he had taken 6 days to get all the prickles out of himself. "We are not talking about gorse bushes," said Al, a little crossly. "I am," said Pooh. Pretty soon, Christopher Robin whispered to Rabbit, and Rabbit said, yes, of course, and they walked a little way up the stream together. "I didn't want the others to hear," said Christopher Robin. "Quite so," said Rabbit, looking important. It's only Rabbit. I suppose you don't know, but what does the North Pole look like?" "Well," said Rabbit, stroking his whiskers, "now you're asking me. I did know once, only I've sort of forgotten," said Christopher Robin carelessly. "It's a funny thing," said Rabbit, "but I've sort of forgotten too, although I did know once. I suppose it's just a pole stuck in the ground?" "Sure to be a pole," said Rabbit, "because of calling it a pole. And if it's a pole, well, I should think it would be sticking in the ground, shouldn't you? Because there's nowhere else to stick it." "Yes, I thought that's what it was. The only thing," said Rabbit, "is where is it sticking? That's what we're looking for." They went back to the others. Piglet was lying on his back, sleeping peacefully. Roo was washing his face and paws in the stream, while Kanga explained to everybody proudly that this was the first time he had ever washed his face by himself. An owl was telling Kanga an interesting anecdote full of long words like encyclopedia and rhododendron, to which Kanga was not listening.
"I don't know about all this washing," grumbled Eeyore. "This modern behind-the-ears nonsense. What do you think, Pooh?"
"Well," said Pooh, "I think..." But we shall never know what Pooh thought, for there came a sudden squeak from Roo, a splash, a loud cry of alarm from Kanga.
"So much for washing."
"Roo's fallen in!" cried Rabbit, and he and Christopher Robin came rushing down to the rescue. "Look at me swimming!" squeaked Roo from the middle of his pool, and was hurried down into a waterfall into the next pool. "Are you all right, Roo dear?" called Kanga anxiously. "Yes, look at me swimming!" And down he went over the waterfall into another pool, and everybody was doing something to help. But Pooh was getting something. Two pools below Roo, he was standing with a long pole in his paws, and Kanga came up and took one end of it, and between them they held it across the lower part of the pool, and Roo, still bubbling proudly, "Look at me swimming!" drifted up against it and climbed out. "Did you see me swimming?" squeaked Roo excitedly, while Kanga scolded him and rubbed him down. "Pooh, did you see me swimming?" Christopher Robin was near, but he was not listening. He was looking at Pooh. "Pooh," he said, "where did you find that pole?" Pooh looked at the pole in his hands. "I just found it. I thought it ought to be useful. I picked it up." "Pooh," said Christopher Robin solemnly, "the expedition is over. You have found the North Pole." Eeyore was sitting with his tail in the water when they all got back to him. "Tell Roo to be quick, somebody," he said.
"My tail's getting cold. I don't want to mention it, but there it is. My tail's cold."
"Here I am," squeaked Roo. "Oh, there you are. Did you see me swimming?" Eeyore took his tail out of the water, for he was waiting for Roo to come, and swished it from side to side.
"As I expected. Lost all feeling. Numbed it. That's what it's done. Numbed it.
Well, as long as nobody minds." "Poor old Eeyore, I'll dry it for you," said Christopher Robin. But then Christopher Robin said to Eeyore, "Pooh's found the North Pole. Isn't that lovely?"
"Is that it?"
said Eeyore. "Yes," said Christopher Robin. Is it what we were looking for?" "Yes," said Christopher Robin.
"Oh.
Well, anyhow, it didn't rain."
Sting, oh yuck, yuck, it's halfway across the floor, oh yuck, yuck, that is so disgusting, oh yuck, yuck, it's really, really gross. Touch it first, I dare you, go on, poke it with a stick. Look out, because it might scare you. Oh, I'm going to be sick. Oh, yuck. Yuck. That is so disgusting. Oh, yuck. Yuck. It's halfway across the floor. Oh, yuck. Yuck.
That is so disgusting. Oh, yuck. Yuck. It's really, really gross. You broke the mucus lining. It's oozing greenish juice. It smells decayed and slimy. Oh no, I think it's loose. Look out, it's glomming towards you. It's sucking for your shoe. It's a snot Tyrannosaurus. Don't let it get on you. Oh, yuck. Yuck. That is so disgusting. Oh, yuck. Yuck. It's halfway across the floor. Oh, yuck. Yuck. That is so disgusting. Oh, yuck. Yuck. It's really, really gross.
Trying to think what I decided I was going to play. I think I'll do the next song is a song written by Marjorie Richards that I like to perform a lot, and Mary kind of liked me to sing it again, so I sang it here actually last March, so some of you may recognize it one time that you heard it. You know, is there any way of shortening this strap? So feel it.
I'm standing by the door like you were waiting for a ride. Hitchhiking out of love and looking at the signs along the road. You left a long time ago. Well, something in you missing, you don't want to talk. The jingle of your keys and you were going for a walk. Even as you closed the door, you left a long time ago. Romance is a fickle beast, and I don't know, but it's gone and the trail is cold. It left a long time ago. We're going to a party, of course you'll drive. I am half awake and you are half alive, I say you know. I should have left a long time ago. Well, you say you were waiting for me to change my clothes. I was only waiting for you to say let's go. It's as though the will to leave left a long time ago. Clothes in the closet, dishes in the sink, that's where they go. Oh, but the reason for the way we think, they left a long time ago. It's not like we left love somewhere, more like a wrong turn, more like an old stuffed chair. We were sitting there waiting for something. Are we waiting for something? Or terrified that something left a long time ago. Well, standing in the driveway, staring at the car, as if it really mattered how we got this far, or how we came to know we left a long time ago. Long time ago, long time ago, oh, 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 oh. Long time ago, long time. And I've been learning some old swing tunes, so I'm glad to do a little old jazz tune. Bye, bye, blues. Bye, bye, blues. Bells ring, birds sing. Sun is shining, no more pining. Just we two. Shining through, don't sigh, don't cry, bye, bye, blues. Ba 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 ba. ba 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 ba